Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass, there's a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass.
And welcome back to another great episode of Seth and Sean Sports Radio. This is Sean Palmer. We're awaiting Seth Gamet. It seems like he has just come on the line. We're moving him on to the from the hold to the show. Seth, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, no. Do we have the echo going?
Do we have the echo going?
No, I don't have any echo going. Do you?
Yeah, I got echo
on my end.
Sorry.
Walking through
96th Street.
Go.
It is what it is. Did we even have a show last week? I'm trying to remember.
I was in Arizona last week.
And that precludes us from having a show.
I don't know if you had a show last week. I was in Arizona.
Sean, we can't host a show without you.
Yeah, right.
It's like Mantle without Maris.
World without Hardy.
Heart without Hardy. Just play the opening, or did I miss it already?
Laurel without Hardy. Oh, we want to play the opening again? Hold on a second.
No. We don't need to.
Well, I'm trying to find a phone that actually works. So I think we got one now. Hold on a second. Okay, so we're back on. Seth, are you there?
I am still here.
Excellent.
And I'm not echoing.
Okay. Yeah. So anyway, it is an absolutely muggy day in New York today. There's no doubt about it. It is one of those dog days of summer. And last week, we had the Midsummer Classic, which counted. It was a good game, but I think all the festivities were basically taken off by the two hometown guys, Todd Frazier and Pete Rose. Pete Rose named to the Final Four, or the Best Four, that the Mount Rushmore Four of the Cincinnati Reds, and received a standing ovation for those at the Great American Ballpark. And Todd Frazier had probably the best home run derby since Josh Hamilton.
Well, the funny thing was, he probably wasn't the most impressive. I think that went to Jock Peterson, the rookie from the Dodgers. But Hamilton hitting three consecutive game-winning home runs in his last at-bat, or contest-winning, was pretty amazing to watch in front of the hometown fans, the Jersey boy. And it was nice for a city and a team that has not had an enormous amount of success over the last 25 years to have something to root for. Because, I mean, yes, there certainly was a nice applause for Pete Rose. But I don't think anyone sees that going any further at this point.
Well, there was a great article by Tom Verducci on SI.com, who took a trip from, I believe it was Las Vegas to California, with Rose, a four-hour trip, and did an interview with him. And basically, Pete is still of the belief that I didn't get suspended for gambling on baseball, and the Dowd report didn't say that I got suspended for betting on baseball. So since I haven't done anything wrong since the Dowd report, I should be let back in. That seemed to be his mindset.
I'm also waiting for Shoeless Joe Jackson to get back in. I don't see either of them happening anytime in the near future. The reality is, he sees what he wants to see. He portrays what he wants to portray. And, you know, he's a guy who made a lie, kept digging deep to get out of the lie. And, you know, this is a forgiving country, and sports fans are forgiving. I mean, when you see A-Rod getting ovations in New York right now, that kind of says it all. But the one thing that they don't, people don't put up with is, you know, when you continuously dig yourself into this guy by lying more and more, the reality is nobody believes him. Nobody's going to believe him. The commissioner, Rob Manfred, is not going to, especially after what was found recently, is not going to undo the punishment. Yeah, you know, I mean, he can say he didn't bet on them winning, but isn't there kind of a, where he didn't bet on them to lose, but is there kind of an inferment or an implication that if you bet on them to win, but you didn't bet on them in other games, that you were pretty much thinking they were going to lose? It's not exactly, well, trying to figure out Einstein's theory.
Yeah, you could also make the theory. You can also make the case that he bet on them to win on some days and used all his talent on those to win, as opposed to saving a Randy Myers or a Norm Charlton for another day. Let's blow out my bullpen so I can win some money. And he's right. The gambling betting slips prove that he never did bet against his team, but I don't really think that matters. In the long and the short of it, I don't think that matters.
Yeah, I think that's how most of us feel. And I know you were a big supporter of him for many years. And, you know, it's disappointing. You know, I don't think it's surprising. I don't think you were shocked by this. But as someone, and I know you have supported, you know, you've been a supporter of Pete Rose. I mean, what was your overall reaction? I think we had talked about this a while ago. But your reaction being, you know, that it's just, I think you had said last week or 2 weeks ago, it's just time to walk away.
Yeah, my reaction is I am disgusted. I'm disgusted and I'm troubled and I'm confused. And people would ask me, how are you confused? Well, my confusion is between the different halls of fame, right? So you have the NFL Hall of Fame, which consistently says that the only thing that you should take into account is your play on the field, period. Nothing else. Nothing outside of the game, nothing off the field, period. Nothing. Alex Karras is in the Hall of Fame. Paul Horning is in the Hall of Fame, both of which were suspended for gambling and later let back in, granted. Then you have baseball, and baseball has what's called the infamous morals clause, which means that you have to be moral to make the Hall of Fame. And there are some, and I'm not using any one of the seven dirty words, there are some mean son of a bitches in the Hall of Fame. Ty Cobb once went after an amputee in the stands. He then continued to spike people left and right. You have Juan Marichal in the Hall of Fame that threw at people. Pedro Martinez one day will be in the Hall of Fame, and he threw down Don Zimmer. And then he was the biggest headhunter of his generation. Bob Gibson was the biggest headhunter of his. And you can make the claim that there is no morality in that. But Pete Rose continually, I think the word that I'm looking for, continually disappoints me. I don't think there's any other way around it. I was an ardent supporter of his growing up. Up until maybe 2 or 3 months ago, I was still an ardent supporter of his. But I think this last thing was the last straw. I thought we had all the skeletons out of the closet. We, being his fans and him, were going to go before Rob Manfred with some form of chance of getting reinstated. And I really think there was a chance, at least reinstated on a limited basis. And then this stuff comes out, I just can't see it. So let's talk about current baseball here. The Mets are 3 games behind the Nationals in the first place running in the National League East. The Yankees are, I believe, leading the American League East. When was the last time the Mets and Yankees were both good at the same time? And look, as a Mets fan, I don't view this as a long-term thing. I don't think that they will be in this position, say, in another month. But it's an exciting time to be a New York sports fan.
No, it's not. Because the Mets don't have any hitting. You know, John Smoltz compared their staff favorably to the 90s Mets team, to the 90s Braves team, which, of course, had 3 Hall of Famers and Steve Avery at their best. Had Steve Avery, who, if he could have stayed healthy, we don't know what could have happened. you know, the Mets have a wonderful start, you know, rotation, with, you know, with Jacob DeGrom, who was phenomenal in the All-Star game, with Matt Harvey with Syndergaard. Zach Wheeler will come back next year.
Did you just call him Syndergaard?
I forget what the last name is. Shoot.
All right, so it's Syndergaard, Matt. Who Syndergaard. I think you put the two of them together. Cinder Matt. It's Cinder.
Yeah. No, not Steven Matt. I said Syndergaard, not Cinder. Yeah, my fault.
Harvey, DeGrom, Nice, and Wheeler coming back.
Yeah. So it's obviously an extraordinarily strong staff. But I'm not sure your hitting was stronger than my 1982 Little League team, where I had four hits the whole season and two of them were bunts. And the other two, I think, were ground balls to shortstop.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to point out that Seth Kamen's beat out a bunt. I'm not sure how it happened.
Yeah, it was about 150 pounds ago. But, the reality is you have no hitting. You know, this isn't like San Francisco where, you know, you have great defense, you have very good pitching, and you have decent clutch hitting. You have no hitting. Nothing. There is not one person in that lineup to fear. So I don't see them going anywhere. And the Yankees have been surprising. But again, I'm not sure if it's a reflection on the caliber of the team, the caliber of the division. I mean, the expectation was that the Nationals were going to run over the NL East. They haven't been great, to say the least. And the American League East has been awful. The Yankees are the superior of the mediocre. And
sometimes it's all you need to be.
Well, it will get them where they need to go. You know, they are probably the favorite at this point to go to win the division. The Mets are probably a favorite, because I think Pittsburgh is the overall favorite to hit the wild card. But, you're kind of in that range, you know, to be in the wild card, which is all you could have hoped for come, you know, April. But I guess I also, and again, it is the dog days of summer. It's, you know, you can now watch with some hope, is I think the best way to look at it from both sides. Do you see either team making a dent in the playoffs?
No, I don't. But the thing is, for the first time in a long time, I don't see either one of these teams being sellers.
No.
And that is something that you can be looking towards, right? So, I don't think that the Mets are going to make the playoffs. I said that before. I've said that all year. I said, this is the growing pains year. This is the year where their pitching comes together. The next free agency or next offseason, we go and trade one of these arms, which you're going to have to do, and get a hitter. And you bring up a guy like Mike Conforto, who should be brought up next week when Kadire goes on the DL finally. But the fact is, there are a couple of bats in the system. This is the year that the pitching staff comes together. But this is not the year that the Mets or Yankees need to be sellers. They don't need to be buyers either. I don't think they should be either. I think they should stand pat and go with what they got. Now, when's the last time the Yankees were not a buyer? I can't remember the day.
It's been a couple years. You know, they've gotten a nice bounce back. You know, they got nice bounce back years from Rodriguez and Teixeira. Pineda's been solid. You know, CeCe's just, you know, who knows. Brett Gardner has probably been the best player on the team. Betances has been great. You know, it's a team that in the AL Central, that would they be winning that division? No. You know, is it a team you kind of worry about 2 years from now? When, I guess not, because a lot of the big contracts outside of Sabathia expire within 2 years. You lose to Teixeira, which is the worst to me, and you know I've said this, is the worst, one of the worst contracts I've ever seen. You lose A-Rod one way or the other. And, you know, you see what happens. For a baseball diehard, it is a nice time. It is, you know, a New York, especially considering what we've seen out of New York sports over the last 12 months. As you said, I wouldn't say it's a good time to be a New York sports fan, but it's a heck of a lot better than it was 6 months ago.
Well, that's certainly true. And let's move on to the 6 months ago with, okay, so the Dallas Mavericks get spurned by DeAndre Jordan, but Mikhail Prokhorov finally decides that he made a mistake 4 years ago, 3 years ago, in signing Jaron Williams and buys him out. Now, they take a little bit off the top, both sides, but Jaron Williams decides he wants out, he takes a little bit less money, and he moves himself to Dallas to basically step into the shoes of Rajon Rondo, who went to Sacramento. Good move, a bad move? Does Jaron have anything left? I think this is a very good move for them.
For Dallas, it was the best of a bad situation. You have a guy, A, who wanted to be there, who does have something to prove. Because remember, four or five, when he came to the Nets originally, people were praising him. He was the number 1A point guard in the NBA behind Chris Paul. And at times, people thought as good. New Jersey / Brooklyn was a debacle. The reality was he was not a leader. He was not a guy who, I shouldn't say he's not a leader, but he was not a guy who could lead on the New York stage. Here, you have a pretty decent team. I mean, I don't even say decent. So with the East, it was decent. The West, you're still looking at lottery. But you have him and Wes Matthews, which is a nice backcourt. Dirk is still Dirk, or 60% of Dirk is still a pretty good player. And, you know, the problem is, and everyone knows this, you know, once the DeAndre Jordan situation rectified itself, you know, I mean, he killed them. Because they would have probably had a very good chance to re-sign Tyson Chandler and didn't make much of an effort because the thought was that he was going to Dallas. So, you know, there's still a good rebuild for him, sure. Good play for the Nets. It's addition by subtraction. You know, they need a complete overhaul. After this year, Johnson is gone unless they can trade him during the year. And then at least your salary cap is manageable, even if your draft picks aren't. So I think everybody wins in this situation. And yet Billy King still keeps his job.
Well, I'll tell you a person that certainly wins, and that's Mikhail Prokhorov. Because his luxury tax, which was over $100 million last year, or 2 years ago, $100 million 2 years ago and like $70 million last year, now may be below the line due to this trade. And if he can get Johnson off the team, man, if Billy King can trade Joe Johnson without taking any long-term contracts back, he should keep his job.
No, he shouldn't. He was not good in Philly. He was not good in New Jersey. He's not good in Brooklyn. You know, he's not someone who believes in the draft. He believes in signing free agents. It's almost like an adage that when I was looking for a job, that, you know, many, many years ago, that when I was trying to work at Goldman Sachs, and they said, you know what, you're a nice kid, you're a smart kid, but you went to GW. We don't know what we're getting out of GW. But if a guy goes out of Penn and he screws up, well, then it's their fault. And I kind of, the comparison, I think, is it's a little far-fetched, but I think it's relatively apt. You know, you pull sign a free agent, and you pick up a Joe Johnson. Nice player. You know, it was a nice player in Atlanta, was a nice player in Phoenix, but a nice player for the Nets. But you gave up pretty much your entire future for it. And, you know, Garnett and Pierce, well, quote unquote, how did you know they were going to be too old? Well, it didn't take that much brains. It didn't take that much brains. So to me, he's done a lousy job.
Billy King did go to Duke.
I am aware. And they've been as effective with their GMs as they have been with their, actually, I can't say that because Danny Ferry did a nice job in Atlanta. But know, that he went to Duke doesn't really change too much one way or the other.
I was just saying he could have been hired by Goldman Sachs.
Well, if you had the choice to make $5 million running a basketball team or work at Goldman Sachs 80 hours a week, which would you choose?
Yeah, that's true. It's absolutely true. You know, I saw something the other day that surprised me, and maybe you could shed some insight on this. So I was looking at basketball recruiting, and why I was looking at basketball recruiting, I have no idea. Maybe I was bored.
Because Syracuse is having a great recruiting class for its team that's down on scholarships.
Okay, fair enough. We got the 26th player in the draft in the country 2 weeks ago in Caius Battle, and even better for me, is that he decommitted from Michigan to go play at Syracuse. That just made it even better. Take that, all you Big Blue people, because, yeah, I'm tired of hearing it. Anyway,
ladies and gentlemen, he's still getting over the championship game from 2 years ago.
I am.
For those of you not sure where this bitterness is coming from.
There's much more bitterness because I know a lot of Michigan fans. And I really don't like that Michigan fans threw this in my face for a month, that they got Tyus Battle, who had forever said that he was going to go to Syracuse and had commitment and had provided cues that he was going to go to Syracuse, and then all of a sudden picks Michigan. And all the Michigan people come out of the woodwork, and they're like, ha, 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 he took blue over orange. Well, where are y'all now? Anyway, but that's not why I'm bringing this up at all. What I'm bringing up has to do with your beloved Terps. And for those that do not follow the show, generally, Seth and I have some inkling of what we're going to talk about before we get on the show. Today, we had none. So he has absolutely no idea where I'm going with this.
Not a clue.
So this is going to be an interesting conversation. So the budgets of teams that spend on recruiting in the Big Ten came out a couple of weeks ago. Can you tell me who the number one team in the Big Ten is as far as spending money on basketball recruiting?
I'm guessing since you're bringing this up, it's probably Maryland.
Absolutely not.
Okay, good.
Nowhere even close.
I would probably guess Michigan or Indiana.
Indiana is number one. Indiana spends over $600,000 a year on recruiting.
Okay.
Now, would you like to take a guess at the bottom three?
Michigan, Ohio State, and Maryland?
Michigan, Maryland, and Wisconsin.
Really? That shocks me.
That's what I was looking for. That was the surprise I was looking for.
Well, I guess also, is that over the last few years, or is that currently this year? Or
that's from last year.
All right. Last year may be a little bit, from Maryland's purposes, that may be a little bit biased. And here's why. We didn't recruit anybody. We only had two guys coming in. One was a JC transfer from the Maryland area. So pretty much no matter what the amount was, now, yes, they're looking at future prospects, and Maryland is in the running for a lot of big ones for 17 or 16-17, however you want to call it. But realistically, we were only looking at three guys last year. So, I think it's a little different when you're trying to rebuild a team with five players, that needs five guys, six guys, versus a team that needs one or two.
Okay. Look, my take was, I was shocked by the amount of money that was spent, first of all, by Indiana. So Indiana spent, $673,000 on recruiting.
Don't get me wrong, that's insane.
The next highest was Illinois at $431,000. So less $240,000 less. After that came Purdue at $197,000.
Really? So after the first two schools, there's no one within. There's no one within 400,000.
I missed this. I'm sorry. So first is Indiana at 673. Next is Illinois at 431. So there's a $240,000 gap there. Then is Nebraska at 416. Then is Minnesota at 359. Then is Iowa at 291. Michigan State at 256. Michigan at 234. Ohio State at 226. So that's another thing Michigan has beaten Ohio State at. 197 for Purdue. Rutgers at 111. Maryland at 104. And then Wisconsin at 62 grand. Now, I'd like to point out something. First of all, this is 2013-2014. So, Indiana...
Oh, that's not the same.
So, Indiana, who spent $673,000 the year before, spent $420,000. And the year before that, spent $228,000. So, they have almost doubled their recruiting expenses over the last 3 years. Doubled it each time.
Tom Crean has been desperate to keep his job, and I guess he's doing what he feels he has to do. That Indiana allows that is amazing. And then I take back what I said, because 13 and 14, they recruited about four or five guys. Maryland, at least, I don't know anyone else, recruited four or five guys in. So that, and so that number now shocks me. That genuinely surprises me. Well, now, was this, do you have this for every conference or just for the Big Ten?
Just the Big Ten. I might be able to find it for other conferences, but the only one that I had seen is the Big Ten. Let me, Number two overall is, they had that in here. So number two overall is, okay, so Indiana University spending, this is according to the Indianapolis Star. Indiana's spent, would have put it first in the nation in the list compiled for the previous year. So last year, they were the top. The year before, it was Louisville at 542.
Wait, so you said they were 542 or someone else was 542?
So in 2013-14. So in 2012-2013, Louisville was 542.
Okay.
And Indiana was 420. So they went up and up $250,000. Now, examples of this include $3,800 for airfare for three people on a campus visit. The guy actually signed with UNLV. $13,000 in subscriptions to recruiting publications. Now, to be fair, Indiana basketball did bring in $22 million in 2013-2014. So they spent, what, 1/29th of it?
About 1/30th of it, yeah.
3%, maybe a little less.
Something like that.
A little more. So, not necessarily, they're not taking money out of the carpet or money off the couch, but still, that's a lot of money.
Yeah. I also kind of wonder, in a lot of ways, now, you look at the other teams that were pretty high, which surprised me. Nebraska, you know, not exactly a basketball, not a team I would think really cared too much about basketball, let alone being a powerhouse. But I guess when I think about it, you know, Bo Ryan, for the most part, recruits Wisconsin kids. He's not, you know, he's not less than other big-name coaches. Wisconsin's always been the team that's kind of kept their players in-house, in-state. Maryland, although, as I said, you know, this does surprise me, but you're not flying if you're going anywhere on the East Coast from Maryland. So the flight, you know, you can go up to New York, you can take a train. You're going up to D.C., you have D.C., you have Baltimore, you have Philly. So you may not be as apt to have to fly across the country to go to some of these things. Part of this may simply be location. I mean, I don't see too many people going to Iowa for big recruiting. You just don't. So I guess that probably plays a part in it, but that the discrepancy is so enormous, I admittedly find I'm a bit taken aback by it.
Now, a little comparison going on here. For football recruiting, which is a whole lot more, right? I mean,
yeah,
there's a lot more people. So to put this in perspective, we just talked about $640,000, give or take, for Indiana for a year in basketball. Georgia Tech, the total recruiting cost for 2012-2013, just the year before, Georgia Tech led the ACC with $746,000 in recruiting, only $100,000 more.
Now, is it basketball or football?
No, that's football.
Oh. Well, that kind of kills my argument. Although I'd like to see what the SEC fees, SEC recruiting numbers are.
I can give you some of the number. I got some of the SEC. What would you like? Which one?
All right, give me Alabama.
Alabama for football, $983,000.
LSU?
$577,000.
So the discrepancies aren't quite as big as I was.
The leader of the pack in the SEC, Auburn, $1.3 million, and Tennessee at $1.3 million.
Well, at least it got Auburn a national championship game.
Agreed. Now, you know, that may have something to do, like, again, you said, sometimes you have to fly, right? Tennessee, you really, there's really nowhere to go. But that totally, but you would think if Auburn has that, Alabama should have it too, right?
I would think so. I guess it's also probably easier for Saban in a lot of ways where he can snap his fingers. And he may not have to make the 4 or 5 flights to go meet people where one will suffice. But, no, I don't know. I find that I'm a little surprised. I mean, I guess I can see that Tennessee is a school desperate to get back to being a top school in this regard. Because, I mean, let's face it, they don't really have much else. And, you know, you bring in a new coach, they may have had to promise Butch Jones that they were going to go all out to do this kind of thing. Don't know.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the discrepancy between, and you're right about Bo Ryan and Wisconsin, in that they go after their own, like Sam Decker was one of their own from Wisconsin. And that actually brings up another valid point to me. While we were gone the last 2 weeks, so Syracuse has officially said that Mike Hopkins will take over in 3 years, but another coaching giant has also said that he'll step away in 2 years, and that's Bo Ryan. So Bo Ryan is a I hate to use the word God, but he would be on the probably the Mount Rushmore of college coaching right now. If you had to put 5 faces on there, I think he's got to be on there. Who is replacing Bo Ryan in that system?
Tony Bennett.
What's that? Tony Bennett?
I would say Tony Bennett. I remember correctly, Bennett's father coached at Wisconsin, coached at Wisconsin Green Bay.
That's correct. That's Dick Bennett. Dick Bennett.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah. I'm doing this off the top of my head. And then I think, you know, Tony went out to Washington State, built something out of nothing. But I get that, you know, especially even the way he plays that slowdown ball, the slowdown tough guy, tough defense. It's more of a Big Ten. I believe it's more of a Big Ten kind of basketball than it is an ACC basketball. And I wouldn't be surprised, you know, as a guy who probably grew up in that area, the idea of coming back, having achieved beyond anyone's expectations at Virginia, it may be a pretty tempting offer. I mean, I think you're also going to look at, you know, now there's all these, you know, the big name small school guys. Archie Miller at Dayton, I'm sure, will be there. You know, I'm sure there's one or two others I can't think of off the top of my head. You know, but I would say the first call that they go out to, I would think, would be Tony Bennett.
I just find it strange because while you have lots of alumni, I only say this from Syracuse's point of view, but I'll say it for Duke and I'll say it for other big schools, where you say, hey, you know, there are guys in the coaching tree that make sense, right? So even if you wanted to go away from Mike Hopkins, if you're on Syracuse, you have Jerry McNamara, you have Louie Orr, you have there was somebody else that was off the tip of my tongue. I'm sorry, I'm forgetting. But you have two or three guys that are alums that are going there. And you don't have those big names for Wisconsin. And I'm not sure why, but you just don't have them. And
because until 1995, 1996, Wisconsin was not a basketball powerhouse. You know, they were pretty, I mean, they were big actually when college hoops started in the 40s. They won a title or two. But until, I want to say either 1999 or 2000, I think it was 2000 when they went to the Final Four. You didn't hear anything about Wisconsin basketball. It wasn't prevalent. And then, first led by Bennett and then by Bo Ryan, over the last 15 years, they've become one of the most consistent schools, 20 wins, 25 wins every year, culminating with last year's probably should have won the national title, led by Kaminsky and Nigel Hayes and Decker and all those guys. You know, but these guys are discussing Louie Orr, you know, I mean, when I think of the, you know, Syracuse's tradition, this happens to go back a lot further. And I think that plays a part. It goes back 20, 30 years. Nobody is saying Jerry McNamara is ready to be the coach of Syracuse. Or I don't think anyone is saying that. You know, Mike Hopkins has been his assistant for what? How many years? 20?
Yep.
Something like that?
Yeah, great.
So he's earned his keep. He's earned his keep.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the interesting one will be, and everyone kind of knows it, the interesting is going to be when Krzyzewski steps down. Because you're going to have 14, 15 guys who are head coaches on that family tree or assistant coaches forever. That one will be fun.
So, you know, let's extrapolate a little bit. So, to me, I think that's Johnny Dawkins' job.
And I think Johnny Dawkins has done pretty much diddly squat. You know, on paper, yeah. But he's won one big game as a coach in 9 years, 10 years. And that was 2 years ago when they beat Kansas in the round of 32 without Joel Embiid. I mean, a nice win. But he hasn't done, you know, he has a huge family tree. But most of them haven't been that successful. I would think, my guess is it would be Amaker, which kind of drives me nuts, because Amaker was not particularly successful at Michigan. I believe he put them on probation, and he's now succeeding at Harvard because he can recruit. So, which you couldn't do for many years, couldn't offer scholarships at Harvard. I don't know who they go for. And I think it depends. You could see a guy like Chris Collins build up Northwestern. I mean, it's not something that's going to happen. He's not retiring next year. You could see Wojciechowski building up Marquette. You know, it'll be an interesting decision, but it's many, many years down the road, I would
think. And you could see Jay Billis just coming back from the studio and saying, I want the job.
I'd give it to him.
I think I would too.
He's probably the most popular guy in college basketball. And this is coming from a Maryland fan about a Duke alumni. So I think that says something, although I'm not quite sure why.
And he's the most popular man because he tells it like it is, right? So that's why.
Yeah.
It's funny because as a fan, you like the outspoken critic of the game. Look, I did not like Charles Barkley as a player at all. I thought he was rude. I thought he was condescending. What he did in the Olympics was disgusting. what he did in the 92 Olympics. Absolutely awful to me. But as a commentator, this guy's awesome because he doesn't pull punches at all. And Billis is the same way. And I'm trying to think of a guy in the NFL that I would compare him to. And I can't, Howard Cosell, but that's way back when. Dennis Miller, but nobody liked him.
Maybe Mike Mayock?
Yeah, maybe Mike Mayock. You're right. That's a good comparison. I like that one. But they are very, very good to the fans because they say exactly what we think and with no regard. I guess you have to be secure enough in your job to be able to do that.
Well, that's exact. If Charles Barkley loses his job, he will go drink beer, play golf for the rest of his life without a second thought. Mike Mayock, if he says something inappropriate, whatever, loses his job, we'll get another job in the NFL. Well, what happens is a lot of times, and I actually think Chris Webber has been pretty good about this also, knowing a little bit newer to it. Ex-athletes are afraid to criticize because they're one of a kind. And, Barkley's been gone for so long that it's irrelevant. And that's why, that's why we talk about how I find worse in sports radio worse and worse. Although I guess the guy that I do enjoy is now leaving ESPN, which leads to a very interesting situation. But because everyone's afraid to be critical. And, your job is to be critical when you're doing this. So it'll be, but again, I think everyone loves, but eventually people are going to get tired of Barkley also. I don't know when, but I assume it'll happen at some point.
See, the thing is, though, Barkley only talks about basketball. Your other guy, who I believe you're referring to, Keith Olbermann, talks about everything.
I was referring to Colin Cowherd. But,
he's leaving?
Yeah, Colin looks like he's going to Fox.
Oh, I did not know. Okay. Well, I could put Colin in the same breath as Keith Olbermann.
Yeah, I mean, Colin, I think, is sometimes a bit of an ass, but so is Olbermann. And, I don't always agree with it. A lot of times I don't agree with what he says. And sometimes I think it's more hyperbole than anything else, but at least it's something that can be discussed. A lot of times we talk about this. I used to enjoy Mike and Mike, but the reality is they're fun. They're fun to talk. They're fun to listen to, but did they really say anything?
Well, Seth, can you make the case that you get disgusted and people lose interest with Cowherd and with a guy like Olbermann, while don't lose interest with a guy like Weber or Barkley, is because those two guys played the game. They're talking about the game in which they played, so you give them more credence to that because they played the game.
That's probably valid. Cowherd, I also think Cowherd just says stupid things. And, I don't think it's based on the validity of his... his basket, his knowledge in football or baseball. I mean, I just think that sometimes people say things to get attention to themselves. And he does that.
Well, if ESPN is losing Colin Cowherd, look, I listened to him when I was in D.C. a lot because I had a nice drive to and from work and during the day. The one thing that Colin Cowherd brought to ESPN was a love of college football and West Coast college football. He totally went against he still goes against the quote East Coast bias. He gets the insight into the West Coast, which I found quite endearing when I was listening to him, because I, as a person that watches college football and watches college basketball, I don't stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning to catch the West Coast games, unlike some people that can't sleep.
Can't imagine who you're talking about. But yeah, so we'll see where he is. Supposedly, there's a few interesting ideas of what he's going to do. The big thought is he may get a 6 o'clock show to go against SportsCenter. And SportsCenter has been the, the main stay of ESPN forever. But, so many of these guys are leaving. At some point, it's worth taking a shot and seeing if you can build something against it. Van Pelt only does the midnight show. I don't know who does the 6 o'clock. I'm not really home for it. But, we'll see what happens.
Yep. So, Seth, I know you have to go. Is this the time where you bid us adieu?
Yeah, I'm actually randomly walking through Randall's Island Lost right now trying to find tennis courts.
So. That's even better. So it's basically like Blair Witch Project, but Seth came out.
Exactly. At least I have a tennis racket to protect.
There you go.
All right. I'll see everybody next week.
All right. See you. So just a little programming note that we have coming up. Seth is going to drop right now. Seth will be going on his honeymoon in a couple of weeks. So we have a week next week where we are both here. I'm looking at the schedule right now. Just hold on one second. Let me pull this up. Okay, so July 27th, the both of us will be here. August 3rd, the both of us will be here. August 10th, I believe, is the week that Seth is away. And we will be having Nevate Isles subbing in for Seth Kamens on August 10th. Then August 17th, Seth is back, and he will regale us with stories of the Greek Isles and Istanbul. Monday, August 24th, we will be having our college football preview. Monday, August 31st, we will have our fantasy football preview, and then in a special Labor Day show on the 31st, we will be having our NFL preview here on the Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show. So a litany of good things that are coming about here on Seth and Sean. If you'd like to call in, I know we didn't give the number all day. It's 760-283-0846. 760-283-0846. We have another 13 minutes on the show. I'm going to go check the studio and see what we got, if anything has come in that we should be aware of. So far, nothing. Going to my go-tos here on the internet or the interwebs. So far, I got nothing. But there was a trade made yesterday in the NBA, which I'd like to discuss. Ty Lawson gets traded from the Denver Nuggets to the Houston Rockets for basically nothing. Now, Ty Lawson was admitted into a rehabilitation for alcoholism. He had his third drunk, I believe it was his third, it may have been only his second, drunk driving arrest of the year about a week ago. He admitted himself into a rehab center. And basically, Denver wanted to get rid of him. That was it. They didn't want any part of him. He was a detriment to the team, addition by subtraction, as Seth alluded to earlier. And so they traded him. And the trade went by last night, and I'm going to get the details of this trade. I know it basically, but you know what? Sometimes you just want everything. So the trade, Ty Lawson goes to the Rockets, which is a win for them. No doubt that is a win for them. So Ty Lawson goes to the Rockets, and in exchange for Ty Lawson, the Rockets give up. Man, I can't get this trade. Notes are somewhere. Here we go. Okay, so why can I not find the actual trade? There's lots of stuff going on here, but I can't find the actual trade. Hold on one second. Coming up on. Nope. Nope. I'm going back. Okay, so here's the actual trade. So part of the deal for Ty Lawson, Houston sent Kostas Papanikolaou, and I pronounced the name wrong, so excuse me, Pablo Prigioni, who we know in the New York area as the point guard for the Knicks last year, Joey Dorsey out of Memphis, big hulking guy, Nick Johnson, and a protected first. Along with Ty Lawson, Denver will send a future second-round pick to Houston. So that's a trade. An interesting trade for several reasons. First of all, the Nuggets waived Prigioni today. Take that off the salary. Nick Colo has a fully unguaranteed approximately $5 million salary by October 4th. So you know what? That may be wave two. That would save them another $5 million. But the kicker came today. And I give Ty Lawson a lot of credit. So right now, Ty Lawson is damaged goods. He's, like I said before, he's in rehab and whatnot. Previously, he was owed approximately $12.5 million this season and $13.2 million next year. Both years, absolutely guaranteed. NBA contracts are generally guaranteed unless you sign for an unguaranteed amount. As a condition of the trade, Ty Lawson made the final year of his contract, 2016-2017, non-guaranteed. So what does that mean? That means that if Ty Lawson struggles on the court, next year the Rockets could waive him with no money owed. If Ty Lawson succeeds, they can just opt into the contract. And he's on the hook. They're on the hook for the 13 million. This is a no-lose situation for them. It was unclear earlier if there was a guarantee date, which meant that the Rockets had to say, by this date, you must know, before free agency or after free agency. An update is, according to Eric Pincus of Basketball Insiders, Lawson has a June guarantee date. So basically, the Rockets have to let him know in June, before free agency starts, whether he will be a free agent or whether he will be committed to a team. This absolutely helps Houston for next year. They now can play Lawson starting with James Harden, which is an offensive dream, because you have a guy that likes to distribute in Lawson and a guy who likes to shoot in Harden, but a guy that does not want to play the playmaker being in Harden. Now, defensively, we all know that I believe that James Harden is a turnstile. He got a little better last year, but he's still a turnstile. Ty Lawson, not much better, still a turnstile. So they could play that matchup, but then again, why would they, considering they would have two turnstiles at the guards position? Now, if they were smart, they would convince Ty Lawson to come off the bench. And if he came off the bench, you'd have Patrick Beverley, who is an outstanding defensive player, although coming off an injury, still an outstanding defensive player, and Harden at the point guard, at the starting guards positions. And then you'd be able to bring Lawson off the bench to man that second unit. And he'd be able to run, because that's what they do, and that's what he is really good at. And that's what he was really good at in Denver. And I think that this vaults them, this one trade, vaults them into that kind of place where they can make a run to the West. They have a lot of talent on that Houston team. And they really didn't give up much. They didn't give up a starting player. They do lose Josh Smith, who went over to L.A., to the Clip Joint. And now they have Dwight Howard, Terrence Jones, James Harden. They have a good amount of talent on that team. Ty Lawson only adds to that talent. So anyway, we got about 5 minutes left. Excuse me. It's hard talking all by yourself for 13 minutes. But I do give credit to Seth Kamens for showing up for 45 minutes, help me out, and I got 5 minutes to go, of which I might take maybe four. So in the past week, the past couple weeks, I've traveled a whole lot, seen a lot of things, saw a lot of relatives last week at my grandmother's 90th birthday and at the memorial service for my grandfather. And we talk a lot of personal stuff on this show, particularly when it comes to sports, because that's what the show is all about. But I feel like the fans of the show also know us personally and what we go through on a daily basis, because we bring a lot of our personality into this. Well, my grandparents are my personality through and through. I've talked about them numerous times on the show. You will see an article by me. It takes a lot for me to write. I've written, I think, 3 or 4 articles on Back Sports Page over the last couple of years, and most of them have been, I think 3 of the 4 have been about my family and how they relate to sports. You'll be seeing another one coming up soon as it relates to my grandfather and hockey, and this being the first year that the Islanders will not be playing in the Nassau Coliseum, and how that really compares to the first year of my life without my grandfather, and how that has affected me. So I ask you, the listeners of the show, to check out backsportspage.com. Give me comments. Give me some feedback. Tell me how to be a better writer. It's the only way that we improve here at Back Sports Page. We'd love for you guys to call in the next couple of shows. All the previews will be posted online at Seth and Sean Sports on Facebook and Seth and Sean Sports on Twitter. So we have a NFL preview coming up, college football preview coming up, Nabate Isles coming up. Man, Nabate Isles coming up. That will be an interesting show, because you listeners know Seth is generally the one that controls the dialogue, and I provide the commentary. Well, Nabate is kind of another Sean, so it'll be very interesting to see how the two of us manage for an entire 60 minutes. But you know what? We'll do it. Both knowledgeable, we both respect each other. We'll get through it. We're not like two Keith Oldmans. So anyway, with that remaining, I wish you all a fond adieu for today. 57 minutes down, and I'll leave you with a little sweet child of mine.
1, 2, 3, 4. Bum.
She's got a smile that it seems to me reminds me of childhood memories, where everything was as fresh as a bright blue sky.
All right, Tommy, you're the oldest. I'm counting on you. Come on.
She's got eyes of the bluest skies as if they thought of rain. I hate to look into those eyes and day and night.
Nice vibrato.